It is the morning show. I'm Kate Archer Kent. Glad you could be here. We look at new interventions for suicide prevention, and please be mindful that this could be a sensitive conversation, and take care. In Manitowoc County, there's a nonprofit that aims to reach at-risk youth in non-traditional ways, and it's called The Production Farm. It recently started offering its services to schools, partnering with counties to offer cooking and gardening, outdoor play, in addition to behavioral therapy. Join in on how to reach young people and your experience with alternative mental health therapies, 800-642-1234. Email ideas at WPR.org. Wyatt Keither is here, founder and president of The Production Farm, based in Whitelaw. That's a village in Manitowoc County. Wyatt, welcome to the Ideas Network.
Well, thank you very much for having me.
Good morning. I was scrolling through pictures of The Production Farm. Can you first acquaint us a bit? Give us a sense of what it's like on these 10 acres.
So, yeah, definitely, of course. So, The Production Farm, we're a very outside-of-the-box and non-traditional organization in the way that we approach behavioral and mental health programming. On our facility in Manitowoc County, we are a 10-acre farm out there, so we've got our gardening spaces, we've got our music spaces, art spaces, video game spaces, a lot of cooking goes on out there. Anytime you show up, it's going to smell like bacon or bakery or any type of like delicious, fantastic thing that the providers are working with the clients on creating. So we take all of those different things that are involved in somebody's life, any type of interest, whether that's fishing, whether it's going biking, and use that as sort of the conduit to which we're doing all of our behavioral and mental health programming.
How do youth get referred to The Production Farm? How do they find their way to you?
Sure. So we work with, right now, specifically Manitowoc and Sheboygan County through their CCS programming, which is the Comprehensive Community Services, which is an amazing program that the counties in the state of Wisconsin offer. Through that, a person is assigned a facilitator, and through that facilitator is how that referral comes to us. We have just become an outpatient clinic, so we're soon to be able to take referrals from your mental health, other mental health practitioners, through your pediatricians, through your regular doctors, and through the schools.
And so you do have a staff of therapists and counselors. How do you incorporate behavioral therapy sessions into these other activities?
Sure. So what we do at the farm, and sort of the thing that we're very passionate about, is looking at an individual as an individual as opposed to a walking, talking diagnosis. So we look at the person, their whole life, what they have going on, and create a one-of-a-kind, unique, custom plan based around everything that they have going on in their life. And that could be anything from if somebody is food insecure, making sure that people are being fed appropriately, making sure that people are getting everything that they need, clothing, helping with housing, pointing people in the right directions. We're very big on Maslow's hierarchy of needs, but if you're not getting the food that you need in nutrition, it's very hard to get to those higher level things. So we take that custom plan and then we make it 100% around the person, because no two people are the same. So we start with their interests, start with what they have going on, and then build it from that point using the entire team, including the client, making sure that everything that is being done is exactly what they want and to help them reach their specific goals.
If you're just joining us, we're talking about mental wellness, this nonprofit in northeastern Wisconsin that uses alternative forms of therapy to support youth. Wyatt Keither is founder and president of The Production Farm. You can join in at 800-642-1234 on youth mental health and what you've seen and experienced. Wyatt, you have this new initiative of The Production Farm working with schools. It's called Learning Unboxed. Can you tell us about that?
Oh, yeah. This is a really fun one that we're working on, and it's in our second pilot that we're doing with it. So we take the school and look at the things that are going on there and very much do it the same as we do with an individual that we're working with. Because just like no two individuals are the same, no two schools are the same, no two classes are the same. So we go to the school and say, what are the particular issues that you're seeing with the population that you have, and then build a custom program around that. So last year we had a class that had a lot of issues with being competitive. So we built a whole bunch of programming dealing with how to use appropriately, how to win appropriately, and then all of the things that sort of go into why that is particularly happening, and then break it down into individuals in that class as well. So again, instead of it being a one-shot silver bullet on these things, making sure that we're treating everybody as a unique individual, making sure that we're helping with any of the needs that somebody has, so that we have a higher level of success with the programming that we're offering.
You just mentioned the high level of competitiveness among students, which can certainly breed stress, anxiety, and we've seen the rates of loneliness and anxiety, depression, all increased in recent years in young population. And the CDC says it's really significant. Why do you think that is? What's going on here?
As we all know, when we all went through a very huge collective trauma with this pandemic, which definitely didn't help anything. But I think the one thing that we can get out of the pandemic that is a good thing is a lot of these issues were already there. Mm. We just weren't looking at them the same way that we are now. And we weren't talking about them the same way that we are now. So it very much opened a door and put a spotlight on these things, which I think allows for organizations like us at the production firm and other organizations like us that are able to then get in and like have these harder conversations, and then also turn these conversations into something that is more of a celebration, that people now are choosing themselves, which I think is something that is to be hugely celebrated. To have these conversations, to be able to open up like that, is an amazing thing that we were able to take out of something as hard as the whole world shutting down. Not being able to socialize with your peers, not being able to have schooling the way it was. So instead of going back to how things were the way they were, I very much believe in, well, let's make it better and let's turn it into something that is greater than what it could have been if we didn't have this opportunity.
Can you go through a little bit what the outpatient clinic and services might be like? Because I'm thinking about how would you handle insurance or how would you handle transportation to the production farm?
Sure. So if you're an individual going through the county, which is, again, the CCS program is fantastic. We also work with CLTS and all of the acronyms that are out there. Through all of that, it is set up through the county facilitator, who then reaches out to our director of behavioral health, who they have that meeting, and then they come up with this plan to bring it to our team to create the very custom plan to help with the goals. That plan is also changing and evolving and adapting. The same as an individual is changing, evolving, and adapting, so that we can make sure that we have the most up-to-date, you know, service plan and working on the most up-to-date goals that we possibly can. When it comes to private insurance, that's handled the way that most private insurance stuff is handled. So they call up the production farm, and then we start the process that way as well. For transportation, that is also a service that we provide to make sure that we are trying to get rid of as many barriers to care as possible, make it as equitable as possible. So we will pick up, you know, a client that we're working with, whether that's at school, at home, at other therapy services, to make sure that they can get to the farm. And we also do a lot of work in the community because we want to make sure that these interventions and that these coping skills that we're working on and that we're teaching with the individuals also, you know, exist in their spaces and exist in other places in the communities other than just out at the farm. Because that's the goal, right? To make sure that everything that's being worked on is coming across and is being able to be used in life when we're not there.
Wyatt Keither with a CEO of the Production Farm. This is a behavioral health nonprofit in eastern Wisconsin using creativity and arts. Filmmaking, we'll talk about, as inroads to youth mental health challenges, working with schools too. Join in on how you think behavioral and mental health programs can operate differently. What programming has helped young people in your life heal? 800-642-1234. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. You're listening to The Morning Show on the Ideas Network. It is The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. We discuss new approaches to prevent suicide and please take care in what could be a difficult conversation. Looking at Wisconsin data, 271 youth in our state aged 10 to 19 died by suicide in a 5-year period from 2013 to 2017. That is from the Suicide in Wisconsin Impact and Response Plan from the State Health Department. Wyatt Keither created the production farm from a pilot project in 2014. It's this 10-acre farm in Manitowoc County providing non-traditional mental health services to reach youth who suffer from mental health issues. It's staffed by licensed counselors and therapists. Join in 800-642-1234. Wyatt Keither stays with us. Wyatt, you come from a background in acting. Why did you want to start a mental wellness program in rural Wisconsin?
Sure. Yeah, that is my past life, was in the entertainment industry out in New York City. I moved back to Wisconsin. I'm originally from Sheboygan, so coming back here was something that was very important to me. I had worked with some amazing organizations out there as a technical director, and then I had some life stuff happen, had a broken ankle, a surgical infection, spending 10 months in the hospital. Mm. Gives you a lot of time to sort of talk to yourself on the things that you want to do, what you want to leave behind, how you want to make this world a little bit better than the way it was handed to us. And this is something that's always been very important to me. So coming back to Wisconsin seemed like one of the most important things that I could do with my life and to help create this thing and help create these services for the youth in the area where I grew up.
How did your mental health change or be affected when you were battling an injury and in the hospital?
Well, and it's I guess very similar to a lot of the things that we're dealing with now, is that type of trauma is something that, you know, really sticks with you, and working through it is not something that can be fixed in one day, which is why I'm very, you know, happy to be able to provide the services we do at the farm. That it is something that we're able to be there on somebody's entire mental health journey. We're working and opening up our adult programming as well, so that we are able to serve somebody from our youngest we had was 7, our oldest we have now is 23, and we're able to be there to continue those services as long as they're needed.
In terms of filmmaking, you are teaming up with Manitowoc County to screen Mount Lawrence, which is a film created by a Wisconsin native about Chandler Wilde, who tries to reconnect with the father he lost to suicide in 2007. Can you tell us about this venture?
Definitely. Yeah, we're working with Prevent Suicide Manitowoc County, which is an amazing organization. Donna Furman is the person who runs that, and she is a wonderful human being, and we're very lucky to work with them. And so we're flying in the filmmakers, Chandler and Scott Delacruz, who I had gone to the same college that I did, the University of Wisconsin-Stevens Point. And we worked together out in New York City. They had created this film, which, yeah, is about Chandler rode his bike from New York City to where the road ends in Alaska, to name a mountaintop after his father, who had died by suicide, and through that, trying to figure out if he can understand sort of what had happened, why it had happened, to reconnect with his father that he no longer gets to have here, and the whole, you know, process and story of that. It's a really beautiful film. It's incredibly moving and wonderful. And yeah, September 8th at 7 o'clock at the Franciscan Center for Music Education and Performance in Manitowoc, and we're so lucky to have them here, and as many people as we can get there, you know, the better.
Chandler feels this need to leave something in remembrance of his father's life. Is that common for families when someone dies by suicide?
Well, I think it's a lot like in most things, when you're affected by something, you want to be able to help create some change toward it, especially if it's something that has been hard to deal with. Mm. To be able to take something like that and turn it into something that may be positive to help other people, especially with something as hard as this, that I feel one of the ways to deal with it is to create something that is the celebration of somebody's life, and to the celebration of how can we remember this as something that is just hard and traumatic. How do we turn it into something that can still be beautiful?
How does the production farm talk with youth of different ages about suicide? How do you approach that?
So with that, we have like we were talking about with our amazing licensed counselors that we have and our amazing therapists that are there. And there's a whole system in place with all of the supports, including starting, you know, like if it's somebody who would talk to us about it, how then that goes to the county facilitators, how then all those decisions are made. And also the new service, which the 988 is mm-hmm. such an amazing thing that is put out there. And I'm very glad that that exists, and, you know, trying to do the best that we can as the farm to also make sure that that is as well known as it possibly can.
Right, because the National Suicide and Crisis Lifeline is now three digits, 988. It's a shorter number. Will that make a difference in getting people access to mental health in a crisis?
I hope so, and I know that that's the hope, and it's definitely a start and a move in the right direction, and that's the best that we can do, is just do our best to move things in the right direction, and as that's moving, continue to add the supports that we can to make sure that all of the resources are available to as many people as possible.
You know, behavioral therapy is really ramped up online. I'm sure you've seen it in a really big way. And it's also catering to teens. There's Talkspace and there's MD Live and there are these other platforms. How do you feel about the rise of mental health therapy online, you know, in contrast to what you're doing on the production farm?
I mean, I think it's amazing. Any type of additional services are wonderful. And not everything's going to work well for everybody. So like your more traditional therapies may be fantastic for somebody. Somebody who doesn't do well with that might thrive with programming like ours. And if it's somebody that like, you know, like me, that has only X amount of hours per day, having something that can be available like that is also something that's huge. So making sure that all of the avenues to care are there is something that I think as a society, the more we can do, the better we can do, and the better we can serve all of us.
Talking with Wyatt Keither, who is founder and president of the Production Farm in Manitowoc and Sheboygan counties. Farm is a mental health behavioral health center using alternative methods to support youth. You can join in at 800-642-1234. Wyatt, we heard from Matt and Madison emailed and said mental health services, like any other health-related problem in our capitalistic society, is run on a for-profit business model. And the problem is that those without the ability to pay out of pocket are left really scrambling for these services and are all but impossible to access in our for-profit health insurance industry. What do you see there going on, and what is the impact?
So, I mean, it's definitely an issue that's there. I feel very blessed to be able to work with Manitowoc and Sheboygan counties. And through the CCS programming, that's something that the youth and adults are able to utilize our services without having to be out of pocket for them. That the county themselves, that's where the billing process is, and to help make sure that our lights stay on, is through that partnership with the counties. So there are avenues that are out there. I think one of the things that we can do better is advertise these things and make sure that people know that there are things out there that may be helpful to them. And that's like one direction we can do. And there's definitely a lot of things that need improvement and a lot of work. And I think if we're working on just making things a little bit better every day, we will get there. It's just, you know, putting in the work to making sure that the care is given.
Do you feel there is a shortage of mental health providers? Because we've heard so much about that.
That I will say yes. One of the things that we're sort of running into is there's a lot of amazing just humans out there who want to be involved and want to be providing these services. They go through the schooling, which is not easy, do their hours, which is, you know, this giant mountain to climb, which I commend any individual doing this so much. And then when it comes into things like the licensing offices, that's where things sort of bottleneck on that, where it's how do we get this particular licensing that needs to be there when, for whatever reason, you know, the office is understaffed or whatever the programming or the processes that they have in that office makes it very difficult for an individual to finish sort of that last step. So there's a lot of people that want to be doing these things. I mean, we need more, and, you know, making sure that people are knowing that this is, you know, a job that is very rewarding and something that you can do is important, and attracting that talent, but also dealing with some of the processes to make sure that all the, you know, the boring paperwork type of stuff is getting done so people can do the real work.
So as you look at the work of the Production Farm in our last few moments together, where do you see it headed? Where do you see your nonprofit going?
So, yeah, we're doing as much of expansion as we can. There's just such a need out there, and especially for outside of the box and non-traditional ways of doing therapy, we want to make sure that we're as accessible as possible. So we're expanding in a bunch of different ways in programming and the areas that we serve, and doing it in a way that we'll be able to do it in the most healthy way as possible to make sure that people are getting what they need the best way they can.
Wyatt, thank you for joining us.
Thank you very much for having me. I'm very honored to get to be on your show.
I appreciate it. Wyatt Keither, founder and president of The Production Farm, providing alternative mental and behavioral health and wellness services for Wisconsin youth. And if you or someone you know is in need of help, the National Suicide and Crisis Lifeline is at 988. That's a shorter phone number, making it easier to remember and access mental health crisis services nationwide. That's 988. Coming up, a UW-Madison chemistry professor explains how his lab transitioned ammonia into a clean energy source. Join in on the future of ammonia, 800-642-1234. News update is next on the Ideas Network. It is the morning show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. Ammonia is a renewable fuel that is made from sun, air, and water. It's one of the most commonly produced chemicals in the world, used to power buses in Belgium as far back as 1943. And unlike fossil fuels, ammonia could be used to create energy without producing greenhouse gases. Join in on ammonia, how to power cars, produce electricity, future for farmers processing manure, 800-642-1234. Email ideas at WPR.org. John Barry is a chemistry professor at UW-Madison. John, welcome to the Ideas Network.
Good morning.
Good morning. Well, give us some working knowledge here. How can ammonia be used as a fuel, because it's super dangerous, smelly, classified as extremely hazardous substance? Give us some insight.
Yeah, well, you have to put it in context. Gasoline's not that much better, is it? The one of the advantages of ammonia is, you know, it's a compound that contains one nitrogen atom and three hydrogen atoms. There's no carbon in it. That means when you burn it, you don't make any CO2.
Okay, and so now explain here the process of how you get to a fuel source.
Yeah, so you know, as was done in Belgium in the 1940s, you could put it into an internal combustion engine and burn it. And there's people working on trying to improve that process today. It's a little bit dirty because that can produce some nitrogen oxides, which are not very good for the environment. So one of the ways that people are trying to improve on that is with ammonia-powered fuel cells. And that's where my lab has made an interesting discovery that that could really change how these things work.
What has your lab discovered? What have you found?
So our discovery really, there's two parts to it. So I'm a synthetic chemist. We make new compounds. And one of the compounds that we've synthesized, we found that it reacts spontaneously with ammonia to oxidize it to elemental nitrogen. And moreover, that we can regenerate this active form of the compound or the catalyst either at an electrochemical or at an electrode, or with molecular oxygen. And what this means is that, you know, this tiny little compound acts as a little tiny internal combustion engine on its own that's able to burn ammonia. And because of the fact that we can do this at an electrode, that means that we can harness the energy of combustion and get that into electricity.
Well, when you talk about internal combustion and internal combustion engines that could potentially power cars and trucks, other modes of transportation, wouldn't you need to change how the engine works to support ammonia?
Yes. And you know, the major push now is to go from internal combustion to fuel cells, where basically this the energy in ammonia is harvested as electricity. And so right now, one of the big pushes in ammonia is in the maritime shipping industry, where they're now creating container ships that will run off of ammonia instead of really dirty bunker fuel. And these are running with what are called solid oxide fuel cells.
So, you know, ammonia is a big polluter in industrial chemical production. Is it really possible to reduce emissions from the current ammonia production process? I think they call it the Haber-Bosch process.
Yeah, so that's another part of the problem of trying to switch to a ammonia or nitrogen economy. We have to find ways of cleaning up the ammonia synthesis process. So right now, the reason that it's problematic is because of where we get our hydrogen atoms from. You know, nitrogen and three hydrogens. The three hydrogen atoms right now are coming from fossil fuels. And we like to go beyond the Haber-Bosch process to get ammonia from hydrogen atoms that are coming from a more clean source like water.
There's...
So that's still a challenge. It's still outstanding.
Right. And there's this term green ammonia, it's been called. Why is it called green ammonia? And where is that terminology coming from?
It comes from the methods of hydrogen production. So elemental hydrogen is not something that's found on the earth. We have to make it from chemical sources. And, you know, in the old days, we would make it from coal gasification. That would be called brown hydrogen, and ammonia that's made from that would be called brown ammonia. You know, now that we're getting it from natural gas, they call that gray, you know, hydrogen or gray ammonia. And the goal is really green ammonia, where those hydrogen atoms are coming from water rather than fossil fuel.
How do you, you know, scale up a new green ammonia production methods? Is scaling ammonia, green ammonia, an issue to becoming a viable energy source?
Yes, it is. That, I think, is going to be the major challenge, and that's an engineering challenge more so than a chemistry challenge, because, you know, right now, a Haber-Bosch plant will make, you know, huge amounts of ammonia. When they're operating efficiently, they'll fill 50 railroad tanker cars per day of ammonia. And so that just requires an absolutely enormous amount of hydrogen. And, you know, with what we can do right now, making hydrogen from water through an electrolysis process or with concentrated solar power, we just can't make enough hydrogen fast enough to feed a Haber-Bosch plant. So that's an engineering challenge.
We're talking about how ammonia could be used as a clean fuel source with John Barry, a chemistry professor at UW-Madison. You can join in with your questions about ammonia, how you see it used in the future, and whether it would be viable as we look to change the electric grid to clean fuels. 800-642-1234. Email ideas at WPR.org. Can we talk a little more about this element ruthenium and what it would mean to the process of making ammonia a clean energy source? What have you found out about ruthenium?
Yeah, ruthenium is one of my favorite elements. ruthenium is, you probably never heard of it before.
No, I have not.
it's right below iron on the periodic table.
Okay.
And it's actually even better at performing the Haber-Bosch reaction than iron is. So it's well known in the community of people who think about ammonia. And, you know, what we've discovered is that when you take two ruthenium atoms and bond them together, you get a catalyst for ammonia oxidation that operates at much lower potentials, which means you can potentially get more energy out of the system. So that was a really cool discovery.
that's a cool discovery, but is there, you know, how do you get access to this element? Is there enough of it on our Earth? And, you know, that's always a question as to how to mine these rare elements.
Yeah, so that's one of the reasons that I focus on the area of catalysis. The way a catalyst works is that it performs a reaction, but is then unchanged at the end of that reaction, which means you can take a tiny amount of, say, a precious metal like ruthenium and perform the reaction many, many times with that small amount of catalyst so that you can make the most of the small amount of these elements that are available.
We're exploring future uses for ammonia, this colorless, highly irritating gas with that sharp, suffocating smell. UW-Madison chemistry professor John Barry with us, explaining breakthroughs in ammonia as an energy source and a fuel. Join in 800-642-1234. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. You're listening to The Morning Show here on the Ideas Network. It is The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. We're exploring future uses for ammonia, one of the most commonly produced chemicals. We use it to clean bathrooms, make fertilizer for crops. But could it also be used to create energy without any greenhouse emissions? Join in with your questions about ammonia, its potential in energy storage, green ammonia, and use. 800-642-1234. John Barry, chemistry professor at UW-Madison with us. His lab recently made a discovery with ammonia, and he stays with us. Let's bring on a call. Tony is here from Sturgeon Bay. Tony, hi. What would you like to ask?
I'd like to ask John what he thinks the doability of using ammonia in solar-powered absorption air conditioning systems, and could it become the perfect refrigerant in a sealed hermetic system?
Oh, Tony, thank you. John?
Yeah, that's a great question. Ammonia is already very widely used in refrigeration, and you know, I would defer to colleagues in the engineering departments to really answer that question in more detail. But yeah, that's certainly a direction worth pursuing.
Does ammonia's track record of having been used as a fuel in the past inform where we take ammonia in the future?
It's an interesting question. I think part of the track record, so you know, it was used in Nazi Germany because the Allies had blockaded them; they couldn't get oil from the Middle East. But they had discovered the Haber-Bosch process, and so they started putting ammonia into internal combustion engines. And maybe partly because of the fact that it was Nazi Germany doing this, there's been maybe a bit more of a stigma of trying to think of using ammonia this way. But, you know, I think those times are past, and there's a lot of people that are really seeing that there's real possibilities here.
I have this eye on this NASA-backed study that will test ammonia as a carbon-free alternative to jet fuel. What are you watching for in aircraft?
Yeah, that is a direction that for sure needs a revolution. So anywhere where we're currently using fossil fuels, I'd like to see us move to something cleaner, and ammonia is a really good alternative.
Let's bring in Pete now in La Crosse. Pete, what's on your mind?
I have 2 points. Excuse me. One is, I think, though, that ammonia, though irritating to us, I think it breaks down into benign products in the atmosphere. So I'd like to have the guests confirm that. Then the other thing to point out is that ammonia is a pressurized gas, almost exactly like propane, at even similar vapor pressures. So it seems to me that the same storage tanks and the same distribution hardware, for the most part, can be used for either product, so we can repurpose the existing infrastructure to use propane, or correction, to use ammonia.
To use ammonia. Thanks. Yes, thank you, Pete. Two great areas to explore. John, first on the benign aspects of it.
Yeah, so what happens to ammonia if you just let ammonia gas go out into the atmosphere? It'll react with compounds like sulfuric acid or nitric acid to make ammonium sulfate or ammonium nitrate aerosol particles. And these do have adverse public health issues. So, you know, you don't want to have a huge amount of ammonia is going out into the atmosphere. Ammonia itself does have a negative global warming potential, but the aerosol issue is more worrisome.
And what about propane and any types of comparisons there?
Yeah, he's absolutely right about this. You know, storage and distribution, transportation of ammonia, these are solved problems, which is not the case if you think about other alternative fuels like hydrogen. And, you know, hydrogen also has a much more difficult safety consideration than ammonia does.
When you look at down on the farm, ammonia in fertilizers on the farm, there's manure. What impacts and opportunities do you see for farming?
Yeah, this is a really interesting area. So, you know, we've been using ammonia as, so 80% of all the ammonia that's produced is used in fertilizers for agriculture. And there is an awful lot of ammonia that is produced and is there in manure. And for types of farms where they are just stockpiling the manure, there's opportunities to try to recover ammonia from that, either to reuse as a fertilizer or for things like power generation.
What are the next steps for your lab as you look to make ammonia, you know, much more of a potential for energy usage and source?
Yeah, good question. You know, my my coworkers are always coming up with new ideas to find ways of making our catalyst operate better. So that's one direction that we're pursuing. And another thing that we're doing, we're collaborating with a group in chemical engineering from Professor Marcel Schreier to try to actually build prototype fuel cells that operate with our catalyst in it.
What about fuel cells? Like reverse fuel cell technology is out there, you know, using the renewable energy in the water and the air into ammonia without needing that separate hydrogen process. Is that a possibility that could have, you know, good yield, good potential?
Yeah, absolutely. I think that there's a huge potential for there's basically been a huge revolution recently in the area of electrochemistry, where people are thinking about how to use electrochemistry to drive new chemical reactions, as well as using known chemical reactions to produce electricity. And, you know, it's on the electricity production direction that we're focusing.
Right, because there's hydrogen from cracked ammonia. And I'm wondering if you could explain that versus ammonia as a standalone fuel, if you will.
Yeah, that's a great question. So the current fuel cells, the solid oxide fuel cells that people are trying to implement on container ships, they operate by basically heating up the ammonia to 1,000 degrees and cracking it into nitrogen and hydrogen, and then feeding the hydrogen into a fuel cell, because we have good technology already for hydrogen fuel cells. What we're focusing on is an electrochemical reaction that uses ammonia itself rather than trying to crack it apart in the first place. It involves direct interaction of ammonia with the catalyst rather than trying to split it apart beforehand.
John Barry with us, chemistry professor at UW-Madison, as we talk about the future of ammonia, its use, breakthroughs in his lab made recently that could lead to a cleaner form of energy. You can join in with your questions at 800-642-1234. John, on this path to clean energy, reducing and moving away from fossil fuels, you know, when you look at what needs to change to be able to reduce our carbon footprint, where do you see, realistically, ammonia in the mix?
It's a good question. And the difficulty in trying to answer that is that there was a study that came out that looked at, you know, what it would take to transition the entire maritime shipping industry to ammonia instead of hydrocarbons. And they estimated that it would take our entire world's production of ammonia to be able to do that.
Wow.
So if you think about it that way, we would have to basically double the Earth's production of, or mankind's production of ammonia, just to satisfy that one industry. So we really need to, if we are serious about ammonia, we need to up our game.
Would it be the same for aircraft and jet fuel?
Yes. The
same yep. type of impact?
Exactly.
Yeah. When you see that scale of how much ammonia would have to be produced, does that concern you at all because of putting so much into one compound, so much effort to make one compound that would basically elevate it beyond any others?
Well, yes and no. So the good news is that elemental nitrogen, which is the precursor for ammonia, it makes 80% of our atmosphere. It's everywhere. It's not localized in certain parts of the globe that cause geopolitical issues. And if we can get the hydrogen atoms to come from water, which of course there's lots of water on the planet, I think there's a potential. Yeah.
John, thank you so much for this conversation.
Yeah, this was fun.
John Barry is a chemistry professor at UW-Madison. And just ahead, weaning your infant from milk to solids, that journey, that is a journey, right? Often it means pureed baby food in jars, taking that spoon in that jar, making it be that airplane into their mouth. We learn a different way that gives babies more power over deciding what to eat. Join in on how you introduced solid foods to your baby. 800-642-1234. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. You're listening to The Morning Show here on the Ideas Network.